Grace and peace to you from our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. First off, I'd like to just take a moment and introduce myself. I know that a lot of times I come back and I see a lot of familiar faces in the congregation, but I'm pleasantly surprised to say I come back every year and see faces I don't recognize. So good job, Little Church, for being the welcoming place that you are and inviting so many new people in. My name is Brittany Geraltz. I'm a longtime member of this congregation, back from when I was as small as some of those kids that I talked to during the children's sermon this morning. But life has found me some adventures, and God has sent me across the oceans, and I now spend about 7/8 of my year serving the people in Africa. I work for an organization called Mercy Ships. It's actually a floating hospital that floats along the coast of Africa. The first year that I was there in 2016, I was in a country called Benin, off the coast of West Africa. And this last year, I was off the coast of Central Africa in a country called Cameroon. Cameroon brought a lot of beauty, brought a lot of unique challenges, very different patients. It was actually the first time the Mercy Ships had ever been to Cameroon. And it's been a few years since we've done that, so that was an adventure as well. I just want to take a moment and say thank you to everyone that's sitting in this congregation, because I know that a lot of you have been a part of financially supporting me. Mercy Ships is an interesting model in that not only do its staff work for free, we don't get paid for our time, we actually pay them to cover the cost of our room and board. We all do our own airfare, vaccines, all of that. So I would not be able to do this in an extended mission without the help of so many of you. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. And thank you for being a place that I can just come home to during the summer and know that it's such a solid rock and foundation. And it's not just my time in the summer, it's also my time during the year. Little things that you guys have done, like the card shower, just made my Christmas so full of joy to know that you were all back here and praying for me and supporting me. So thank you. All right, Karen, maybe I will just have Shelly slide.
It's done.
So go ahead and advance.
It's turned up.
Oh. Yes.
Okay.
It's okay.
Just do that.
So Mercy Ship's mission is to bring hope and healing to the world's forgotten poor. I hear this repeated and talked about all the time because, you know, we have new staff coming and going, coming and going. So we bring this and talk about it quite often. And working in the hospital, I get to have a special focus on that aspect of healing that we perform. I meet the patients when they come in, I see their deformities, I send them off to surgery, and then I actually get to get them back from surgery and see their recovery and see that physical healing happen. But as I read today's scripture and focused on Hannah, thought about what I would maybe want to speak about, one of the things that really came to mind is that other part of what we do. It's the hope that we bring. In my work with Mercy Ships, I've met so many Hannahs. I've met so many people, men and women, who desperately longed for something like Hannah longed for a child. They longed for relief from their suffering. Parents longed for a different future for their child, free from rejection or debilitating deformities or early death. And so often, I met people who had responded to life's challenges like Hannah did, by falling on their knees in prayer and waiting for God to send an answer. And I was privileged to meet those amazing people and to hear their stories. And I was struck over and over again by the incredible faith that was shown by these individuals as they continued to wait for God's answer with hope and steadfast belief. So today, nothing would be complete without pictures, and I just want to show you some pictures and share some stories with you. The first one is a story that holds especially near and dear to my heart. A little bit different than last year when I was in Benin. This year in Cameroon, I got to take on the role of team leader, which meant that I was actually in charge of a surgical specialty. I get to do a lot more coordinating. I start with the patient from the very beginning when they first meet their surgeon, see them all the way through their inpatient stay, and then with a lot of my patients, I was actually even able to follow their outpatient recovery. So this little baby was just 3 months old when I met him for the first time. But Mercy Ships actually heard about him when he was just a few days old, because he was born with something fairly rare, actually, called a sacrococcygeal teratoma. What that is a really large growth. They start in utero while mom is pregnant, and his happened to be right on the bottom of his spine, kind of right on his butt area. And Emmanuel had been delivered by C-section, and these people looked at this baby in a country where they don't have much pediatric surgery. They definitely don't have complex surgical care where the surgery is going to take hours and hours. It's just not something they're able to do yet. And this baby would have had no hope. But because the doctors knew that Mercy Ships was already in country, they contacted us and asked, they said, "We have this baby, is there anything you can do?" We don't operate on kids before they're 3 months old. We just don't have a neonatal ICU, so we stick to the 3 month rule. And so it turned out to be that little baby Emmanuel was gonna turn 3 months old right when our pediatric surgeon was coming for a 3 week time period. And so we started working with him, we got the lab work, we got the scans, and then mom brought this little baby to us. And one of the things that shocked me about him was that the screening nurses pulled me aside before they brought the baby in, and they said, "Just so you know, mom is blind. She had a congenital issue when she was born, and so she can't see. So it's gonna be mom and auntie and the baby." And so mom walks in with this baby, and he actually had an adult diaper on. His little bum was so big with tumor that when he should have been in a newborn or size one diaper, he was wearing an adult diaper to keep it all covered and contained. And I met him, and I saw the family, and they were really downturned and really nervous. And they talked to the surgeon, and they still seemed really nervous, but we said, "It's okay, we can do this surgery. We're gonna try our hardest and do everything we can for your son." And so then they came back into the hospital a few days later, and I met them again, and they still looked downtrodden, and they still looked afraid. And all throughout the surgical process, they continued to look like that, just scared and afraid. And I actually got to be in there and see his tumor removed. I got to see it put on the scale, and to recognize that this tumor was a third of that little baby's weight. He only weighed about 8.5 kilograms, and it was a 2.5 kilogram tumor that the doctor removed. And then he went into the ICU that night because it had been a really long surgery. And I got to take mom and say, "Do you wanna see? I know you can't see, but do you wanna be there and hear him cry and see his, feel his body?" And so we took her into the ICU, and we took her hand and we placed it on that area where there had always been this lump on her baby. And she ran her hand down his back, and tears just started to come from her eyes because she couldn't see, but she could feel that it was gone. She could feel that her baby felt like other normal babies. So I don't know if you can tell on the picture, it's covered up, but that's not a pile of blankets. That is actually his tumor there. That's me and him hanging out because he actually spent about 2 weeks in the hospital, so I got to know him pretty well. I made him cry a lot, but that was at least a moment that we were pretty happy together, just having a chat. And then that's me with his mom and his auntie. And then I got to keep seeing them every 2 weeks or so as he healed throughout the rest of the field service. And we worked to find a surgeon that he could follow up with, because Mercy Ships tries really hard to not leave things half done. We try, if we've started a surgery, we make sure we can follow it to completion. If someone needs physical therapy, we have physical therapists, occupational therapists, all of that work with them to turn their surgery into the best possible results. And then we follow them through and even make surgeon connections with local surgeons. So we found a pediatric surgeon that was a little ways away that was willing to still see him and follow up for any concerns. So that's actually mom at home with little baby Emmanuel when they were final discharged from our care. And I just love how excited she looks. I love that he looks like a totally normal 4-month-old baby by this point. You would have no idea of the trauma, of the risk that he had gone through. But I said this in one of my notes. My favorite thing about this baby is that they named him Emmanuel, God with us, before they ever knew that Mercy Ships was gonna be a part of his life. They named him Emmanuel and trusted that God would come through before they ever knew the way. Much like Hannah, when you're just on your knees and you don't know where to turn, you turn to God and God has plans that you can't possibly imagine. keeping with the theme of babies, tell you about another baby that I met. This one is Baby Paul. Baby Paul had a cleft lip and palate, meaning had a big opening here in the lip, but also in the hard and soft palate in the top of his mouth. That meant it was really hard for him to be able to eat anything. And so when Baby Paul came to us, also at about 3 months old, he was as tiny as that picture there on the scale shows. He was skin and bones and hardly alive. But we have dietitians and infant feeding specialists that worked with mom. You can see there, they taught her how to feed with a syringe. But I'll say it now, one of my favorite things about this mother is that she kept this baby alive for 3 months. In a culture that often tells you just to toss aside children that aren't up to snuff because they don't have the chance to live, because, you know, if you can't get to a doctor, if you don't have the money, then often these babies would have no chance, and people would say, don't waste your resources on them. They're cursed, you don't want to deal with them. But this mom was committed to her baby. She had worked to feed him with a spoon before she met us. She was expressing breast milk and then feeding him with a spoon to even keep him alive for 3 months. And then she spent the entire field service with us. This is a really long process, because for surgery to be safe for cleft lip and palate, babies have to meet weight goals and age goals. And so that meant that she stayed in Douala. They were from ways up in the country. And she stayed in Douala, continuing to work with our dietitians every week, continuing to watch him grow. And she had that faith and that hope that surgery would come through and that there would be an answer for her child. So this is actually Baby Paul, when the one side is when he was fat enough for his surgery, and then the other side is after he had had his lip repaired. So that was the first stage of his surgery. And then he had to keep getting more weight, because they have to be even larger before we can fix the palate. So at the very end there, that's Baby Paul when he was grown up almost a year old. He had first met us at 3 months, and he had had his first birthday with us. And so that's him when he was ready to go. And I like that picture because it has the growth chart. If any of you have taken your kids to the pediatrician and seen the growth chart as your baby gets bigger, there's a growth chart for you, Baby Paul. Quite a miracle. Now, I won't tell you all these stories because there's not enough time, but I just like to show pictures. So a few of our orthopedic patients, Ange and Ulrich, that had major deformities fixed, you can see Ange's feet are actually backwards in the first picture and then fully rotated and facing forward. And Ulrich was actually having to walk with sticks because he was that far bent over from his muscle and bone problem. So one of my friends, Jabnu, she had a goiter, it's a thyroid problem. We removed that for her and successfully sent her home up to the north again. And then this one, I jokingly thought, most of my time is actually spent doing hernia and lipoma repairs on middle-aged men. I do some of the cute pediatric stuff and some of the goiters, but most of it's hernias. So I thought this would represent the multitude of hernias. They all look the same, but those are all actually different patients. They get a discharge photo because everyone likes to take a photo home to remember their time in the hospital. So this is 16 different men with their discharge photo. They all like to have the nurses in their photos so that they can prove that they met some ladies while they were in the hospital. We did about 200 of those in about 10 weeks' time. We do pediatric eye surgery. So this is Tresser, one of the first times that he could see after his eye patches were removed from his cataract surgery. Kaltumi is a maxillofacial patient. She had a giant ameloblastoma. She's actually only 12 years old. Doesn't quite look like it, but she was flown to us from the north and had a massive tumor removed. Some of our women, after obstetric fistula surgery, they have quite the celebration. And then one of my favorite ways that Mercy Ships brings not just healing, but also brings hope, is that we have a very strong medical capacity building program. What that means is that we lead really strongly in not just performing surgery for 1 or 2,000 people in a year, but we feel like we need to leave the health system better than we found it. So some of the ways that we do that is by training their providers, their surgeons and nurses and anesthesiologists. So we do that several ways. We have one-on-one nurse and surgeon mentoring. That photo there is actually our pediatric surgeon working with a local surgeon doing some training during the 3 weeks that he operated. I had a nurse shadow me several times, They do that for ICU training or for leadership training, wound care training, different things like that. The WHO, the World Health Organization, has a surgical safety checklist. If you've ever had an operation, they did it for you. They went through and made sure that everybody did a timeout, that instruments were counted, simple things like that that take absolutely no money. It's just a checklist that we go through.
Yes.
And we have people that go around and train at different hospitals all over the country to help implement that surgical safety checklist. We do neonatal resuscitation courses with midwives and give them simple bag masks so that they can get a baby breathing if they're not when they're first born. We do obstetric and pediatric anesthesia training because we always hear that that's something that people want. They've got anesthesiologists, but they don't get specialty training. We do trauma care. We do primary surgical courses that train on basic surgical skills. Our anesthesiologists do pain management, teaching on things as simple as local blocks. And then we don't just teach people how to do those blocks. We also give them the ultrasound machine that you need to do that and train them on that. When we do those anesthesia courses, we provide the pulse oximeters so that people can monitor oxygen levels and administer oxygen as needed. We do Ponseti training for clubfoot. There's a really simple method that is just months and months of plaster casting that fixes clubfoot. And so we train people on that. It's really effective and low cost. We do ophthalmic teaching for the cataract surgeries that we do. We mentor a lot of surgeons, and then there's a fancy way that they do it here in the United States now, but we actually use the old-fashioned laser because it's easier to gift people that laser and then they can keep it up. And as part of that, we also do biomedical training because we don't want to give anyone equipment that they then can't maintain after we left the country. So our biomedical technicians will train people in that as well. We do nutritional teaching. We do a train-the-trainer style thing where we train about 30 people in good agricultural practice and then send them out in their communities to train because we believe that you can't have good health and good healing if you don't have good nutrition. All the buildings that we renovate in countries, we actually leave behind and give to the government to be used. So we often pick hospital buildings that have been run down so that they're fixed and then left behind. And then we work with about 200 different day crew, which is locals, every year, and we give them job skills and new ways that they can be marketable as they go out and continue in the work that we've done after we're gone. So like Dr. Gary said in that video I showed at the beginning, he's big on saying that in order for hope for the future to be real, it has to be tangible in the present. So we really work to try and make hope more tangible so that people can continue to have that faith like Anna had, that they can hold on and wait for God's answer. So I appreciate your time, and I appreciate the chance to come and tell you a little bit, and I'll be around after service. I think there's cake and different things like that. If you have any questions for me, I'd love to talk.